WA2SHA, everybody wake up. The net is about to begin.
K2QDN.
Okay, Mike, we got you. You are number one reporting into the Metroplex W2MPX Tech and ChatNet.
Hey, what happened to me? I was number one.
All right, Walter, I'm sorry about that. I was just walking in the room and I just heard a piece of you there. Okay. Good enough. Then K2QDN, you are number two. Sorry, you lost your position.
Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Hey.
What you're doing, but I hear you, so you are number three to check into the Tech and ChatNet. Sorry, I couldn't hear that at all. It was buried in the noise. Please come back.
Right now.
A lot better, John. A lot better. Must be in position.
I opened the screen on the porch. That's before I was talking through the screen.
That could be a problem, John. Any more check-ins on the Tech and ChatNet for W2MPX?
WA2, UPE.
Bob, yeah. Well, welcome, Bob. You're number four on the Tech and ChatNet tonight. Any more check-ins? Well, okay. I guess some people may come in a little later. I'll wait one more 20 seconds or so. And then we'll start from the top, okay? All right, this is WA2SHA. Tonight I got the dubious distinction of managing the Tech and ChatNet. And I guess we'll welcome our number one person here, Walter, to come on and give us a few words. And what subject do you have in mind, if any, Walter? Pick it up.
Yeah, WA2SHA, net control. The group, this is AE2AA. First of all, I'd like to say good evening to you, Armin, and to John, and Mike, and Bob. Good to hear you in there, Bob. You got a nice sounding signal this evening. And John, you better open up more screens. You're in that famous kind of screen room, I guess. All right, well, it's good. We have five people so far participating in the first session of the second TalkNet. So that's off to a good start. I'm going to set the subject. I think that's up to wherever it goes. So anybody feel free to set the subject or several subjects. It doesn't matter. First of all, I would just give you one update that I sent out a card on behalf of the club to the club secretary, which would be Harold. He's recovering from a hip surgery. He had a broken hip, and he's now in rehab, and I guess in a week or so he'll be home, maybe 2 weeks. I don't know how long the rehab is standard for that. But the card went out on behalf of Metroplex. Okay? With that, I will turn it back to net control, and I'll certainly try to participate in any sort of technical subject. It can, it doesn't have to be technical. It can be standard chat. It can be all kinds of good stuff. I might say that today we did have a fellow logged in from England by the name of Nick via the Echo Link, and we enjoyed having a short chat with him. It's the first time he had actually set up his equipment to do Echo Link, and he did a fairly good job of it, so it was kind of really nice. Oh, he did. Okay. WA2SHA and the group, AE2AA.
Alright, yeah. Well, any new check-ins, I'll wait a little while yet and see what's happening. The phone is ringing. Okay, we're going to go Alright, let's pick it up. I'm going to answer landline.
Stand by, there was somebody trying to check in while you were calling, Norman. Who's the person trying to check in to the net? This is AE2AA. The person's just trying to transmit a moment ago. You were doubling, but I don't know if it's somebody had checked in or somebody via the Echo Link. So we'll stand by one more time, and then while Armin's gone, I will pass it over to the number two man on the list if there's nobody else in there. Again, is there any additional check-ins or anybody who made a transmission? Go ahead. This is AE2AA.
KB1LOY disconnected. W2MPX.
All right, so it must have been a fellow signed in, listened, and moved on. So with that, why don't you pick it up, Mike? K2, QDN, and the group, AE2AA.
AE2AA, K2QDN. Well, except for the fact the weather's been nice today, but it looks like what we've been having for the last almost 2 months is coming back with a vengeance on Sunday. Anyway, I'm looking at the list here of all four people who showed up here tonight, and I would be curious, just a general opinion question, the pros and cons of vanity calls. You know, time was when I got my license, that's what you got, and that was the end of the ball game. That was it, you know, from the womb to the tomb. And as years went by, you could modify it a little bit, and now you could get just about anything for a call sign. Used to be the call sign told you an awful lot about the station. You knew pretty much when that license was issued. You knew what area it was issued in, W-2, W-3, all right? So you pretty much knew who you were talking to. But now with vanity call signs, and I happen to have a vanity call sign, by the way. This is not my original. I was just curious. Does anybody have any comments on it? The pros and the cons of vanity call signs. Back to the secondary net control, unless Armin's back. AE2AA, K2QDN. Back.
Okay, WA2SHA is back. Definitely not a vanity call, but one from that hails from the 60s. 1961, to be exact. It was in the middle of my CB career when I decided that I'd like to get a ham radio call as well. My CB call used to be 2W6809. Anyway, I guess I'll explain myself very shortly away why I don't have a vanity call. There's no need for it myself. I think some people have a reason for getting a vanity call is because it's easier to transmit code, and others just simply want it for vanity purposes. But anyway, let's move on to the next one in the list and see what they think of the vanity call. John, KB2DBO, how about you getting a vanity call one of these days, John? But you'll have to be an extra first. Pick it up, John.
It's funny. I've thought about it.
people knew it. And I decided, you know, to stick with it. I could have went to something, went to the initials, or something else, but, you know, I just felt that really have been like you. According to you, I was 16 years old when you were licensed, right? And it's different. I didn't have my first license until 95, I believe.
His batteries are probably running down. I guess the screen door must have closed on him. I'll give him a little time to come back. Unfortunate. I think John needs a little more power up there, or should put the handheld on an outside antenna so he could communicate with us better, or get rid of all screen doors in the house. KB2VVO, are you there, John? Can you hear us?
Okay, can you hear me now? I went down to the basement. I realized I had a battery failure. I began talking. The HD just went dead. I guess I hadn't paid too much attention to the state of the charge of the battery.
Okay, we can hear you now. Noisy, but there, yeah.
Okay, I don't know what you heard before. My comments on the vanity call is that I was only 16 when you were first licensed. I didn't get licensed until I was in the 50, you know, 95. And I've been comfortable with my call. I had a call that was recognizable, and never really felt an urge to change it.
All right, that's John's idea of not getting a vanity call, and I, you know, sort of agree with that because that's sort of the way I feel about it. I'm not a code man, so, you know, I hate Morse code. And I wouldn't have become an extra so easily if the FCC had kept the code regulation, because I rushed right out and got my extra as soon as they took the code away as a necessary thing for the general and the extra ticket. But I would assume that, on the other hand, there are people that have done just for that. You know, I think Walter's one that picked the A2AA kind of thing, because it's easy to transmit, because there's some horrible combinations of letters that can, you know, take up quite a bit of time. So, we got another old ham there that might be able to shed some light on this subject of vanity calls, and that's Bob in Bloomfield. So, WA2UEE, what do you have to add to all of this, Ruckus? This is Net Control. Pick it up, Bob.
Okay, Armin. Good evening to everybody on the net. Well, I'm like Mike. I don't care much for the vanity calls either. I think they should have kept the old numbers, old call letters and what have you. And I know I had a great big map from 1 to 0, and you'd hear somebody, oh, there he is in that area there. But now you can't, it doesn't work that way. I lose a fellow on tonight. K2 something or other, and he was in Italy. He lives in Italy. Got his call letters here, but he's in Italy. So, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, you got your license, you can talk all right. But I don't know. I got my ticket back in 1961, and it was WV2. And I also had a CB license, 2W8068. And then they changed that over to KKE0697. But I got my ham ticket then, and I just kept the call that I had, WA2UEE, and keep that the rest of my life, I guess. I don't go, like I'm saying, I don't go much for the vanity calls. So That's my opinion on that. It would be all right if they could, like a W-3 or, you know, if they continued that. But when you hear a W-2 and he's out in California, you know, you don't know who you're talking to. That's the only bad part about it. So back to net. This is WA2UEE.
W2MPX.
Okay, that was only a machine trying to get in, so we won't answer that. Bob, yeah, that's, quite a bit to say about that that makes some sense. You know, that reminds me, any system that people start, or many systems people start, that try to categorize by numerics and progression, never work out. One of them is the old vacuum tube thing. When vacuum tubes first started, the first number was the voltage of the filament, and then the letters in between actually meant whether it was a triode or a pentode and stuff like that, and the last number was the number of elements usually connected to the socket. And naturally, as more and more vacuum tubes showed up over the years and became thousands from this relatively small list of the 30s and 40s, they had to give up that too. So, you know, stuff like 6G, H8, and all really don't mean a lot. The first number does mean voltage, but the rest of them really have no meaning at all in terms of what that tube really is. So that lost control just as well as the, you know, the ham radio vanity calls or regular calls lost control of the progression. And, you know, it's happening again in the IP fields of the addresses in the Internet where they have to go to 6 octets now instead of 4. They ran out or are running out very rapidly out of the octets. I don't know. Nobody ever figures things big enough, or they never anticipate something that's going to be a lot bigger than it is. And that's the mistake. Got to build enough leeway or cushion into things to take it up. Okay, anyway, that's enough said there. I'm going to turn it over now to Walter, AE2AA. Please pick it up, Walt.
Okay, I just took a little pause in case somebody wanted to check in. WA2SHA, net control, AE2AA. Okay, well, picked a good subject there, that's for sure. And I do have comments. The first comment I really got to say is, Bob, your audio is really sounding really good. I gotta definitely say hats off, and you've got a nice signal, a really nice signal. Very nice to hear. Okay, well, I'm like, I could take it or I can't, you know, with the vanity call. I have a vanity call. I was originally licensed in 1958 as Whiskey Victor II, Baker Herald United, WA. Then I became WA2PHU later on in that year. So I became a tech, and I remained a tech for quite some time until 2005, when somebody told me, hey, you could have a general license, so you don't have to do anything but ask for it. And I did that. But then I figured out, geez, the first guy I sent the QSL card to said, you know what? He was talking to another fellow. Gee, you know, I got a QSL card from some stiff today. He didn't provide a return self-addressed stamp envelope and all that. And I'm saying to myself, well, geez, don't you send out QSL cards, you know, without envelopes and everything anymore? So it was then I discovered I was out of the business too long. So, but I did get my extra. And by the way, Armin, two things I need to update you on. You don't need an extra class ticket to get a vanity call. A technician can get a vanity call, okay? If you want to spend the $20 or whatever it is, you can get it. And the other thing is that you got credit for your code just like I did. 5 words a minute, so that's how we both became extra classes eventually. But I do enjoy the code, and a new license and new tickets, because I had been at the hobby so long. It was really great to, like, you know, be reborn into the hobby again. So, I did select a call that's easy to send CW-wise, because I work mostly CW and digital these days. I'm rarely on sideband on HF, and very seldom on FM, except for here, of course. But I did sort of want a new call just for that purpose only. You know, it's like starting again. Hold on, I'm going to re-trigger it. There we go. Nobody echoing, so I don't have a problem with that right now. Just need a couple more seconds here anyway. But I favor vanity calls only for one or two real reasons. One would be if you want to become one of those old-sounding call guys, you know, a one-by-two call or something like that. I can see carrying on those old calls and not retiring them. And the other is just basically what I did it for. I could have just as well kept the WA2BHU, but it's a little more hairy to send and stuff like that. And like I said, I was back into the ham business. I didn't change the call until I got the extra in 2005. I actually got my general in 2004, something like that. So, okay, that's my comments on that. And be interesting to see what Mike has to say about it, since he's the guy that started it. But I do enjoy the comments back, and if I had my druthers, I probably wouldn't get a vanity call. That's about it. Okay, good subject. See what we have coming up next. Back to net control. WA2SHA, AE2AA.
Okay, I just know new entries into our tech and chat net. Well, yeah, the subject has certainly brought up enough things. As far as myself, you know, the amateur radio was just sort of something I did because my brother had gotten a license about a year or 2 years before I did, and some other of my friends had a license, but I was, you know, involved in electronics quite a few years before I got my ham radio call. You could go back in 1951, go back 10 years, and I was building all kinds of hi-fi sets, you know, tape recorders. I was working on the early television sets, so it wasn't the interest in amateur radio that really got me to call. It was the interest in electronics, and I wanted to learn more and experiment more with amateur radio. Okay, so let's go to Mike now, the next in line, the fellow who brought this up in the first place. We're going to K2QDN. Mike, please pick it up, and this is WA2SHA in net control.
WA2SHA, K2QDN. All right, well, you know, I was looking at the very call signs here, and I, you know, and actually, you and Walt and Bob brought back some interesting memories, because when I was trying to get a license and trying to learn the code at 5 words a minute, the calls were already down to the WV2 for a novice. And my friend was, he had already gotten a tech license. He was WA2, SYI. Anyway, the calls were going down. And finally, I was able to get my code up to the point where I could pass the test. And I remember coming home from school every day. This was 1963. I'm waiting for that envelope to come to see what my call was going to be. But I used to listen to the guys at night, but I couldn't transmit. Them days, of course, it was AM with a beam antenna, horizontally polarized, maybe 20 watts. But anyway, I had the station, but I couldn't use it. And lo and behold, one day I came home, and here's that little envelope from the FCC, opened it up to see what my call was going to be. And lo and behold, it was a WB. Well, they ran out of WBs and As, so they went to WB series. So I got on the radio that night, knew that, you know, excited to try out the new license, WB2AIF. So you figured WB2A, so I was one of the first guys up there to get the B call. I think I aroused more curiosity on the band. Where did you get that call? And it wasn't bad. It had a lot of interesting phonetics. I just hated it. The day I got it, I hated it. WB2 sounded so clumsy. And I said, oh, this is... But that was the way it was. I had it. I was stuck with it for all of these years. It was only a couple of years ago that I got the bright idea to change it. And then came the next big question. What do you change it to? Stand by one. Let's time this thing out. Okay. I start, you know, vanity seems to dictate like initials or sometimes you have a place like WA2NJ. Oh, that would be unique. And I started to think back to when I first started in radio. What calls did I remember through the years? And the one I always remembered was WA2QDN. And the gentleman's still alive in Long Island. License is still active. And he always used to say quarters, dimes, and nickels. And that was the one call I could remember. My initials, who cares about my initials? But who can forget quarters, dimes, and nickels? And that's how that came about. But anyway, vanity calls, good, bad. CW, I could understand, you know, if you're a CW operator, you want the shortest call of all. Unfortunately, like Armin, I am far from CW. I think in my entire life I had one botched CW contact. Anyway, it's just interesting. And then when you start thinking about so-called vanity, why did people pick the letters that they picked? And, well, that can go on and on. But anyway, that's the story. Vanity call signs. You just can't tell anymore. This is K2QDN. Kilowatt 2/4 times and nickels. Back to net control.
Okay, Mike. Yeah. Well, you take Alice himself, you know. He, with all his vanity, he didn't care about a vanity call either. Until there, very near the end. It was only, you know, a few years before he died. He was WB2NGB, if you remember. And he had that call the longest time. Until he got the W2OV. And every time I heard W2OV, I always thought of that station on Route 21 there. Well, Route 20 is it. That connects the Patterson Plank Road with Route 17. That rhombic tower they have out there, it used to be an Italian station, WOV. And you just put a 2 behind it, and that was how it's called there, in between there, W2OV. But at any rate, the I guess we've sort of exhausted the vanity call situation, unless John wants to add to it, and I don't know how to suggest something else to talk about. If people wish to switch, they could also bring up something of another interesting thing that may have happened to them today or last few weeks or last year or whatever that is.
Okay, thank you, Armin. And also, Walt, thank you for the report. And I don't want to open up a can of worms here, but I miss the old Echo Link. So, I'll drop it at that. Yeah, I guess I've been telling you fellows about me with a microphone and the problems I've been having. I went through two mics. I was talking to Mike, and one of them went, so I went on another one. However, I was talking to a gentleman over in Canarsie, New York, yeah, and we got talking about it. And he gave me a phone number to call over in some place in New York. I don't know. I got it somewhere. Anyhow, I called them, and they said, oh, yeah, we have two mics for the ICOM, my radio. I said, oh, great. So I said to her, how much are they? So she said to me, well, I got a brand new one here, and it's $165 plus shipping. I said, whoa. You know, I says, yeah, what is the second one? The second one is $100 plus $15 shipping, you know? know, I throw quite a bit of money, but I've been trying all over. A lot of people have been trying for me. KJI, he goes to all these flea markets or ham fests and things, and he's looking for me and everything. And I told you the story about calling ICOM, and they sent me to their engineers, and nobody had the mic, so I figured, hey, now I got a chance to get the mic. So I got the address and everything. Let me let it drop. So I got the address and everything, and I said, well, you send the money order, we ship it right out. He said, okay. So they said, send a check. We get the check, and it's got to wait 3 days to clear. I said, okay. So it was much easier for me to just write a check out, and put it in an envelope, and mail it to them. Well, finally, I did get the mic. It came yesterday. And that's the mic that I'm using now. It's a small mic. It's an ICOM mic. And it's for this radio. It's got all the push buttons on it and everything. So I can get on back on Echolink. And then I will be in business. So that's the story on the mic. Now, like I said, I've been having problems with my radio. Not problems, really. My fault, you know, of bringing in the frequencies on this radio here. I just can't do it. And I don't want to start pushing all kinds of buttons and things like that. But I was talking to a fella today, and he lives over here in Madison. K2EE. And he's going to come over tomorrow morning. He's going to meet me downstairs, and he's going to come up, and he's going to go over with me the whole radio and help me out, because it's kind of hard for me to see the letters and numbers and what have you. And he, like I said, he's coming from Madison tomorrow, and him and I are going to go over the radio, and I'm going to get it all set up. Once it's set up, then I'm just going to leave it. I'm not even going to bother putting in frequencies. So I'm kind of long-winded, but that's it. I had to get it off my mind, and so back to you. Back to Ned. This is WA2UEE.
Okay, Bob, pretty interesting. It does sound good, though, you know. It sounds like the mic and the radio love each other. It's the best sound you've had in a long time. So we, you know, even though the expense was a little high, it sounded like it was a little expensive. It did work. Yeah, something had to be done, and it looks like it done it. You know what I was thinking about doing somewhere along the line? I got some good broadcast microphones, you know, the kind that they've used in stations back when I was a little boy. The good stuff, the Shure, you know, that stuff, Shure and Estatic. And I was thinking of making a linter base and putting my Shure 55, that big stainless steel head, you know, looks like the front of a 40 Buick, the grill. I was thinking of how that might sound on the radio. And I'd probably enjoy speaking into that a lot more than, you know, than it is speaking into a little plastic handheld thing. So I might work on a project like that and hook that broadcast mic back up. That is something that's been sort of on my mind for the last couple of months, because I hate holding this handheld mic and just sitting here in a chair, and it's just a stupid position. I want to be like at a table, put the mic stand up and speak into it like I was in it, you know, over there at NBC. You know? I want to feel like that. Okay. I guess we can still get, maybe we'll get a round out of this or not. I'm going to go right back up to the top and we'll pick Walt up again, A2AA. And let's see what he has to say about what has transpired in the last three conversations. WA2SHA Net Control. Pick it up, Walt.
Yeah, WA2SHA, AE2AA in the net. Okay, well, that was worthwhile listening to Bob, I've got to tell you that. And, while that was quite a bit of money to get the right microphone, I think you made a good investment, because in the long run, it's going to bring you a lot of happiness. It's really a pleasure. I mean, I just latched onto it right away, with your signal, the audio quality. You sound like a new young man over there. Okay, on K2EE, yeah, we know Dave pretty well. He used to call a member. He was not feeling very good some time back. I hope he's feeling much better. It's been a while since we've seen him. We used to catch him at Hamfest quite often. And his father is a ham, by the way. So it runs in the family. He and other, guys are run a 220 repeater. I think it's in Nutley to where the repeater is. I think it's, what am I thinking now? 224.06. Yes, yeah, for the 06 machine. That's what it is. Speaking of that, I just came in possession of an old antique here. I got an IC-3AT handheld with 220. And the way you put the frequencies in is it has rotary switches so that you set the last digit in the megahertz and the first two digits in the kilohertz, and 100 kilohertz, 10 kilohertz, and there you go. Good to go. I did copy the Nutley repeater. I don't have a 220 antenna. Somebody's going to give me one when they get around to sending it. So it's sort of 1987 vintage, but the battery is still good. The battery pack of all things is still good. So that ought to bring out some memories to some people. I don't know. But somebody sent it to me. They didn't want to chuck it out. Anyway, I think we've had a really good net tonight. I'm going to make probably this my final as well. And certainly if John's listening, we'll say 7-3 to John upstairs in the screen room there. And I think it's been a good net. And Armin, you're running a good net, that's for sure. Well, those will... I haven't reset my timer in the rig yet. I got to get in there and reprogram the timeout, which is still set for 3 minutes. I'm going to set it for 3.5. I just haven't gotten around to doing it yet. I'm a, sort of a put-off-the-job kind of guy recently, but I'm getting back to the old course of events. So let's see what we have to say for next week's net. And I think we got off to a good start, good choice of subjects, and good conversation. I was very interested in what you had to say about tracking down what you needed to get for the, getting the microphone, Bob. And I'm sure Dave will be very helpful. He's a really nice guy. So with that, I will pass it back to the net control. I will make this my final transmission unless somebody has some comments, which, of course, I'm always here to address. But make this my last official go-round. And it's really been a pleasure tonight. Thank you all for showing up, and let's keep a good thing going. So, WA2SHA, net control, AE2AA.
Okay, yeah. And, Mike, I was just wondering, you know, how impressed were you with the site, with our repeater site? I like to hear what you thought it might look like and what everything looked like and what it actually looked like when you got there. That would be an interesting thing. Because I know you were quite enthusiastic to go there, and I wonder how enthusiastic you would be to go there again and again and again. I'm only kidding. But really, Mike, what did you think it was like, and what did you find it to be when you really got there? K2QDN, please pick it up, WA2SHA, net control.
WA2SHA, K2QDN, to tell you the truth, and you asked, so you know, I'm going to tell you right on the radio. I thought I was very disappointed in that site. Boiler rooms, high noise, dirt, that I'm used to. I expected to see something more professional from the other companies who rent space. It's
seemed that the other racks that were up there, it was very haphazard. There was nothing neat about it. You know, everything was, you know, the cabinets weren't straight. It was like wherever you could stick one, you know. Our rack was probably one of the most, the best placed in the place. I really thought that they, you know, I would have expected it to be a lot nicer, the way the cabinets were. Environment, that's a rough place, man. You know, I could understand why the repeater has to be built like a tank. Remember the day that Frank and I were there? It was basically cool out. There was no sun. And that room still had to be 100, at least 100 degrees. I can't even imagine that room on a hot, hot, summer, humid day. That has got to be brutal. It's amazing that the electronics even keeps working. It's not, you know, to go back to maintain the machine, that wouldn't be a problem. You know, basically, it's just like any other site. I didn't expect the tile floors and fluorescent lights and air conditioning, and I wasn't disappointed. But it's hot, and it's dirty, and it's noisy, you know. But basically, I had a real good time, had a good teacher, and I certainly would go back again. Back to net control.
Okay, Mike, I like the way you said how non-professional all the other commercial equipment is up there. Remember, it all is commercial. We're the only amateur radio spot up there. You know, coax cables draped all over everything and hanging from rack to rack. And dusty and dirty equipment, a lot dirtier than our own. You'd almost be expected to find dead rats in a lot of their other equipment here. But it really is a terrible place to be. And if only we had a decent site, because I think we're being irritated with a strange sound, you know, that rattle in the background on weaker signals. Evidently, it's coming from some digital disturbance up there and gets into our repeater. Because when I had the repeater on the bench, there was no such thing. The signal was as pure as hell at any level coming into the receiver. You only hear it when it's up there. The antennas are too close to each other. Our antenna is only about 2 feet away from some other antennas, and Lord knows what we're getting bombarded with. It's a real problem. Yeah, I hate to even think of the place, to tell you the truth. But that's what where it's been for, well, almost as long as I've been in the club. Probably since about 1997. Yeah, right about 1997, that's when Alex put it up there. Because previous to that, it was one of the amp of the repeater was in his apartment in the colony apartments there, which was, of course, another spot to talk about. At any rate, I'm sure Bob takes this all in because, you know, Bob's not really aware of what our repeater is like and what the site is like and all of that. But Bob, I think Mike gave a very good description of dirt, noise, and heat, and humidity. There's basically two large gas boilers up there that run almost all, at least one of them runs almost all the time to supply hot water to the tenants and everything. And there's a giant tank that holds thousands of gallons of water. There's pumps running, all kinds of crazy fans and ventilation equipment. Oh, terrible. So, I guess we'll move right there on past John, on to Bob, if you still wish to be in the net for maybe this go-around. WA2UEE, please pick it up. It's WA2SHA, net control.
Yeah, okay, fellas. Very good. Very interesting. That's the way you described where our site is there for our radio here, but it sounds good. I'm so glad that you got it back on the air, and you know, it sounds good from here. I don't hear any pipes banging or mice or rats running around or anything. It sounds real good here, you know, so thank you for that. Yeah, one thing I forgot, that when I did call the ICOM, they told me, yeah, I they don't have a mic with this radio and this and that much. Okay. They said, however, you can send away for a converter, and you can hook that up to your radio. I says, okay, where do I get that? So they said MFJ. So I called MFJ, I gave them the model number and everything, and they're going to ship it to me. So I think it cost $37 or something like that, I don't know. So finally it did come, and there's a connection on it where you can, for the screw type microphone, plus the telephone microphone. And then on the other end, there's another wire that screws into the radio. So I was, okay. But they give you a book, catalog book, and there's about 15 radios in there. Now you got to pick out your radio. So I did pick out an Icon there. I thought it was my radio, and it had about 10 posts. Now you got to take this wire for my Icon. You got to take this wire, and put it on this post. This wire on that post. I said, oh, that's great. I could hardly even see a post with my eyes. So I took it down to my buddy, he's a ham, W2KX, and he's pretty smart on that, and he's got good eyes. So he took it apart, took the cover off of it, and he's, wow. So he did the best he could do, looking on it. He said, well, I'm pretty sure they go here, but also in large letters it said, if you make a mistake, you're going to blow up the radio or this and that and everything, you know? So I said, okay, that's it. So he put all the wires on, but I put it back in the box. I said, I'll wait till the mailman comes and brings this mic that I have now. So it's in the drawer someplace. So I didn't even attempt to use it, you know, because I didn't want to hurt my radio with a roller just for a little $39 unit, you know. So that's where it is. So now I got my mic, and my radio's running good. And, but I'm still looking for another mic. And being the mics are so hard to get, if I can get one, Gene's also going to keep looking. You know, I could just put it away and, you know, have it for a spare. Because, like I say, this mic is so hard to get that I'm going to keep looking, you know. So that's it for tonight. So I'm going to listen out, and then I'm going to go QRT. And get ready for the big day tomorrow, and I'll tell Dave that I was talking to you fellas, and I'm going to try and get him to come over here and join us. I should have done that today, but I was kind of busy, so I didn't really have time to do it. So back to Net Control. This is WA2UEE, and good night to all. Hope to catch you all next week. 7-3s.
Okay, Bomb 73, to you, and I know about those little boxes you bought there. That's a universal interface box where they can run any one wire from one side to any other connection on the other side. So naturally, no matter how a mic is wired differently among different radios, there's always a way to connect them up. And naturally, whoever had to figure out that interface, I wouldn't want the job, had to go through all the schematics of all the different manufacturers, all the radios they probably, you know, all the famous radios they made, and had to compile a library of all those different connections. That can get really confusing. And I wouldn't doubt whether some of them even have errors in them. It should drive people more crazy than that. So, I know what you mean. Okay, then. So, I guess the only person that's still standing in here, John has checked out, Walt has checked out, and I guess we have K2QDN to sort of put a cap on the net tonight, you know? And so I'm going to turn it over to him as K2QDN, WA2SHA here in Net Control. Go ahead, Mike.
WA2SHA. To QDN. Well, while we were up there, Frank also had me climb up the ladder and poke my head up through the hatch.
pointed it. I had made an assumption that the antennas were on a parapet wall of 3 or 4 foot high. I couldn't believe that that antenna was mounted on such a small concrete curb. That's really got to be fun to work on that antenna. You know, I mean, you are at the end of, what the hell are you at that point? You're 33 stories, I think you're up that high. And getting on that side, you know, the whole thing, I thought that it would be higher. I didn't think they would allow them to build a building with such a narrow little parapet wall around it, just for general safety's sake. That must be some trick to put an antenna up there, you know. You better be tied on good and solid, because the chances of going over are very great. And, you know, take it from one who works on bridges, man. That place is, you really got to keep your wits about you when you get up close and personal with that antenna. Because, boy, there ain't nothing between you and becoming an angel. Anyway, it was really interesting, and, as I said, Frank was a good teacher, and I'm kind of glad I went along, because there was really a lot of stuff to carry. And it's so complicated to get up and down, you know, with the security and all. However, it was interesting. I saw it, and I was a little disappointed, because we kept calling you for the test, and you were nowhere to be found, Armin. Shame on you. But that was only the start of the funny part. You see, there's always got to be a funny part in anything you do. And hang on, let me let this thing drop. All right. We're sitting in the car, and I told Frank that I had an HT in my pocket, which I had set up all these years for Metroplex. So, okay, fine. So Frank said, well, I'm going to take mine then. And he left his in the car. So up we go. We get everything put back together again. Now we want to test this thing while we're standing here. So I key up the HT and nothing happens. Nothing. You know? Metroplex is as dead as a doornail. This is not good. I can see I'm transmitting, but it's not coming up. So Frank says, are you sure you got the right PL? I says, yeah, this has always been set up for Metroplex. Yeah, let me see. So he takes it. He looks at the PL. Yeah, we're set up for the right PL. Of about 10 years ago, 158 something or other, and in that period of time since I've used this HT last, they've changed the PL. And Frank was took the radio, and he could figure out how to change the PL in my radio, very embarrassing. Once we got the PL right, you know how gratifying it is to key the thing up and watch it come up when you let go. Oh, we triggered the repeater. And luckily, Bill, he's been a long-time member, N2IJU in Manhattan. He came back. I thought it was you at first, but it was Bill. Because it's so noisy up there, you can't hear anything. And he said, yes, we were transmitting pretty good. And that's all I had to hear. Then it's round up the tools and let's get out of here. We'll talk to you from the parking lot. But at least we got a radio test from up there. But I could see that that noise is just unbelievable with the blowers running and everything else. Wow. However, I had a real good time. WA2SHA, K2QDM.
Yeah, no, but the 16-inch parapet there is bad for another reason. Our antenna is on the sheer face of the building, which is straight down, you know. You don't hit the roof over the skyline room there. You go straight for the ground at 70 miles an hour if you fall off that damn thing. And I guess, you know, a lot of things could happen while you're putting up an antenna. You know, you get snared in the cable and the antenna falls out of the mount and you get dragged foot first over the parapet wall. You know, I imagine all these things because I'm terribly afraid of heights, Mike. Probably not like you. But as I got older, I'd scare the heck out of me. And a gust of wind could come and knock you over, you know. Because you're looking right down the sheer face of a cliff where that antenna is. It's terrible. And another thing, I hate hate ladders like that. You know, when I was a kid, I'd climb any ladder, but those damn steel rung ladders, especially when they're very close to the wall where you only get your toe on the darn thing, that's pretty dangerous, too. If I would have built that building, or maybe if they would have built the building nowadays with new codes, you'd have the parapet wall would be like, as you say, you know, 3.5 to 4 feet high. And the ladder might have become a stairway inside. A circular stairwell would have been nice in there instead. Yeah, it's really, they did terrible things in those days. That's an old building. It's about almost 40 years old now. And it's certainly terrible to think that they would put up buildings like that today. I haven't been in any new buildings, or late buildings, but I bet you things are a lot different when you have to go up to the machine rooms and up to the roof today. I know when I worked at JCPenney, they had a 47-story building there on the corner of 53rd and 6th Avenue, and that was built, in, amazingly enough, in 1964, and the parapet was about 4 feet high. So I could just about get my head over to look down the side of the building. And that felt real secure. And besides, going up didn't involve any ladders. You got right to the roof with the last two floors was a circular staircase. It was pretty nice. Back to you, Mike. WA2SHA here.
I'm another quick break. What's the timeout timer set for?
4 minutes, Mike.
Okay, because I haven't timed it out recently. And for me, that's like a new world record, you know. Well, I've been to some new ones down in Jersey City. My that's where my son does most of his construction is down there. And we went to one, I couldn't tell you the address. It was only about, I don't think it's 4 years old. And we actually had to go back on a plumbing leak. So he says, hey, Pop, he says, you want to go? It's like a Friday night. And I could use the help. You know, there's a leak in one of the apartments, and the guy who normally would do it, he's not there. That so we went down there, and after we got that straightened out, we went up to the boiler room. And as I recall, the elevator on that building, it was almost on a river. The elevator went to within one floor of the roof. Now, the whole boiler room was on the roof, including heat, hot water, the whole 9 yards. That was on the roof. But there was a 4-foot parapet. The view was phenomenal, because you're right there looking at New York. But I think that's probably code nowadays. In fact, if you look up on the roofs of, grocery stores and stuff nowadays, you'll see that the air conditioning equipment, especially if it's elevated, if it's up like on a 10-foot platform like they sometimes do, that now has railings and lights. They never used to put railings on them, but now I think OSHA made them do it. The thing has got to be safe for a serviceman, which is only right, you know. In fact, when you view the skyline, Armin, of Jersey City, you'll see two 50-story buildings going up on the same piece of property. That's what he's building now. He's in charge of the plumbing on those two 50-story buildings. It's somewhere down near the river. I don't know where it is, but it's down here somewhere. Anyway, yes, I think they're getting better with age. More restrictions, perhaps. But, oh, I had a real good time. Yes, Frank and I got along famously. And, in fact, after the after we got everything up and running, Frank brought me back to his house, and I met his wife, and had a real good time with her, too. She's a very friendly lady. So, all in all, it was a wonderful day. And if you ever need help again, you know, the only thing, you know, there, too, is that we're carrying a lot of stuff. We actually have a security guard carrying stuff with us, too. We just had so much, and we did it in one trip. But when you get off the elevator, I think you're on 31. You got to go up to 33. That's three flights of stairs you're climbing. But we survived. And all in all, it was a memorable day.
Yeah, I don't like that last climb either, that crappy, concrete staircase with the iron pipe rails and everything. Another scary thing about staircases. I don't know if they've changed them. But the iron pipe, the first rail on those stairs, starts at about maybe 18 or 20 inches off the stairs themselves. So I could just picture if there was a banana peel on the steps and you slipped, you could go right off, you know, slide off the steps and fall about two stories right in that concrete chamber there, that last three flights, you know. That's scary, too. You would think that the railing would have maybe the first 15 or so inches of the railing would have a screen or something to keep someone from sliding or stepping off the stairwell into the stairwell area. And it's all scary stuff to me anyway. I know you've been a bridge worker, so it's different for you, but the best I've done in my life is, I mean, really go up on my roof, which is scary enough, on the third floor at about 40 feet off the ground, a sloping roof with, when I was a kid, you know, I could walk all over the thing and everything, it didn't bother me, but I don't go up there anymore. The highest I go now is up to the fire escape top, and that's where the antenna is mounted on the fire escape itself. I know that's an illegal mount, but so far the inspectors haven't bothered me on it, so I'll leave it that way. Back to you, Mike.
WA2SHA, K2QDN. Well, yeah, I've been working on the George Washington. I've been on a few other bridges, but the GW's, you know, that's been like my home. And at the top of that's basically a 64-story building. And after a while, you get to the idea that, you know, 6 stories, 600 stories, what difference does it make? You know, when you hit the ground, the party's over anyway. And as far as going off the side, going off and going down to 33 stories, yeah, that's going to hurt when you hit the bottom. But as I can figure out the design of that building, that room and stuff and all above it, you're still going to be falling 2 or 3 stories onto the roof. So you're still going to come out banged up. Even if you didn't go the whole distance, there's a good chance you ain't going to come out of it anyway. So, but what are you going to do? You know, yeah, that vertical ladder, that's kind of something. Because if you ever miss your step or something, you better be holding on. If there's nothing, you're coming. And that ladder must be, that's got to be 16 foot high at least. You know, it's not like a little 8-foot ladder. And then when you get to the top, you're hanging on with one hand, and with the other hand, you got to jockey around and try to get the hatch door open or closed, as the case may be. Yeah, that was quite an experience, man. Anyway, another quick comment. You wanted to resurrect that microphone. And the trouble is today, all these radios got that electro-tet microphone in them. They won't take what we would call a standard high impedance, low impedance, carbon, nothing. They're looking for that little tiny element. So you almost have to embed that little element inside the mic to make the radio want to listen to it.
Oh, I'm not going to do that. That's silly. No, I can build a simple interface to interface the mic with the radio. The microphone is a 50-ohm balanced output, which was very popular and still is sort of popular in broadcast studios, not as much as it was in the 30s and the 40s. They used to use a piece of two-wire shielded mic cable and then use a transformer at the end to step up the voltage for a tube circuitry, because the output in a 50-ohm mic is way down in just a few hundred microvolts. It isn't much. Has to be stepped up about, with a transformer that matches it to approximately about 20,000, 30,000 ohms. Well, I would build an interface. One transistor will easily handle that, where I could come the 50 ohms into the emitter of the transistor, and then the collector resistor and a little resistive divider network and a blocking capacitor, and it'll make the radio feel as happy as if it had an electret, and it wouldn't make any difference. Is it got to balance the amplitude? Also might have to play around with the frequency response a little bit, put a little network in there to alter the frequency response, because these mics put out quite a bit of bass, and you don't want to put too much bass into these radios because their circuits are not designed to handle them. you know, communications range is only from about 300 cycles up, not from 50 cycles up. So, but I can well handle that. That's well within my capabilities. I have no problem with that. Build a little network box, and even with a 9-volt battery in there to power the transistor, the battery life would probably still be at least a year or so with a few microamps drawn by it. Yeah, I got that all planned out. You know? So, back to you, Mike. WA2SHA here.
WA2SHA, K2QDN. All right, because I've got two D104s here, and, you know, it's a real pain in the neck trying to match them to a modern-day radio. I've tried a preamp, but you got to watch the way they wire the radio, too, because, which one? I think it's this ICOM, the 207. They actually loop some voltage through that electrode-head element. Some do, some don't. This one does, and it's a little bit unique, but, you know, in the old days, it was much simpler. You plug the microphone in, and if you had the right impedance, it worked. Today, everything is getting so specialized, and what Bob was talking about, that's a horror story. You know, $160 for a microphone for a $300 radio. Armin, this is a long-distance call, and I'm going to be a while, so at this point, I got to say 73, and it's been a pleasure.
Okay, 73, Mike. We'll be talking soon again. All right, then. WA2SHA will be clear, because I'm, let's see, it's almost getting a little late here. I've got to do some things yet before I turn in and everything. Okay, Mike. So, we got an interesting subject. We'll continue it on about the mic interfacing, and I can tell you some things that can be done with a D104 as well. Okay. WA2SHA, clear.